Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is Garden Life on the morning show for today, Tuesday, September 10th. My name is Julie Prochinski, here with my favorite co-host, Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Hey, good morning, Julie. You know, you were a little quiet at first because I had you turned on mic 2, but you're mic 3. But I think listeners heard you.
I don't need to start over, do I?
Well, it's up to you.
88.5 KRFY. Where we are, morning show, Garden Life.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
There you go. Now we can hear you.
Also in the studio this morning is Suzanne Taubert, and she's here to share all her knowledge about garden life, and we're excited to have you, Suzanne.
Thanks so much. It's good to be here.
And today we also have an extra show that will begin after Bird Life after 9 o'clock with the Kinnick-Sioux Native Plant Society.
Yes, with the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society, and it's a unscheduled interview, so I hope that listeners this morning will have time to tune in and listen. It's a similar topic, different but similar, and a great topic. They've got some upcoming events that we really want to make sure people know about. So please, if you can, hang on and listen for another great hour this morning.
Good, good. We'll be back live at 9 o'clock then.
Sounds good.
So I guess maybe we'll start with the weather.
We usually do, Julie, and weather is so much a part of everything that we talk about on Garden Life that I don't think we can miss it. Well, it does seem as though fall may finally be going to be coming here to Sandpoint, because today we've got one of our last really nice days, high around 80, partly sunny. Then tonight things start to change. It's a little cool. In the middle 50s, and then tomorrow 80% chance of showers and a high of 67, and it kind of looks that way throughout the weekend, right through to the weekend. Lows in the high 40s or around 50, highs in the middle 60s, and a chance of rain every day, and I'm excited about that.
Yes, I just got my pear tree in yesterday, so it should be perfect timing.
Perfect timing for fall plantings and thinking about a damper, wetter fall that is so good for plants and for wilderness. That's my segue for you in today's topic.
Well, I think that's perfect, Julie. Today's topic is my wild garden. So I don't know if anyone heard Phil's morning show program last week, but it is the 60th anniversary of the signing of the Wilderness Act, and his show explained why it's important to protect and preserve wildlands. And that got me to thinking about garden life and how living in wildlands shapes our experiences. So on our show, we'll be discussing how the elements of successful, functioning wild plant communities can be applied to our home gardens. And I found the perfect guest for that. Suzanne Taubert is the owner of Cedar Mountain Herb School. She describes herself as a bioregional herbalist. She's also an author, a speaker, an adjunct professor at Bastyr University, and a guest blogger at Mountain Rose Herbs. And Suzanne actually found time to come in and talk to us today about all of her projects. And thank you for being here, Suzanne.
Thank you, Julie. It's so good to be here once again. I'm just thrilled to be part of the community of Sandpoint and to be able to share what I know with the listeners.
How great. That's a great segue to you introducing yourself a little bit more to the listeners. You have been on before, but tell everybody what brought you to Sandpoint.
Well, truth be told, I call myself a political refugee from the west side of Washington State. But, you know, truly, whenever I would leave Western Washington and zip over the line into Idaho, my shoulders would drop and my breathing got better. And the smell of the pines is one of my all-time favorite smells. And I just felt like this is home. Every time I came to Idaho, I knew that this was home. And someday I was going to be here. And lo and behold, I've been here now for 4 years.
Explain to us what a bioregional herbalist is.
A bioregional herbalist, gals, is one who works with the plants in their area. You know, we talk about community and how important it is to be a part of what's going on in our town. However, it's also important to be a part of the plant community. When we're using the plants that are in this area, that are adapted to this area, then it helps us to ground and find our place in the community of not just the people, but the plants, the wildlife, the air, the sun, the rain, the snow, everything. And so for me, a bioregional herbalist is just one that is so immersed and the plants and the fauna that are here.
Fantastic. When I was looking up Wilderness Act, it's described as the understanding the value of intact habitats from the plant's point of view. And why do you think, Suzanne, that the plant's point of view is important?
That's their home. That's where they live. And we need to do the least amount of damage as possible. You know, I take students out into wilderness areas for harvesting. However, what is so important for me is the word stewardship. And it's not just a noun, it's an action. We have to steward the area. And so I tell my students, I say, look me in the eye, you know, and I just do the finger pointing thing. And I say, you are here under the permission of the plants and everything else that lives here in community. And so we watch where we step. Maybe it's a day that we're just, you know, visually learning about the plants and there's no harvesting. We pay very close attention to not just the one plant that we're focusing on, but what is everything else around? What does everything else need that if we take the one plant, that the rest of the ecosystem can be highly damaged or even destroyed? That is really at the heart of what I teach.
And without plants, none of us would survive, including the fauna of the area.
Correct. That's true. And even below what we see above the ground, there's that mycorrhiza web, mm-hmm. you know, and people liken it to, you know, a computer web, which I don't like because I'm not super duper techno, but a lot of people can say, oh, the web is global, right? And the mycorrhiza, it's been said that it is everywhere on the globe and it connects plant to plant. It can help one plant to understand what another plant is going through, whether it has environmental stress or a predator attack. The mycorrhiza will help to communicate because it's living on the roots or in the roots of, say, a cedar tree. And that reaches out to the next cedar tree and says, hey, we've got to start producing hormones and terpenes to protect ourselves because this one is hurt. And so it's not just above that, but it's also below.
So this is the plant communities or the habitats that you're speaking of.
Exactly.
So habitats are plant communities. We can think of that in our own garden as like companion plants. You know, you have companion plants and certain plants like right. other plants. So mm-hmm. the communities are there by nature.
That's true. You know, and, you know, if I think about my own garden, I have a 4,000 square foot garden, 11 or 13 raised beds. And then I've got plants in the ground. I always need more space. But what each of the bed is a theme. What grows well together? What plant is not going to overtake? Now, my Aunt Mary's spearmint has its own raised bed because, you know.
We all know the reason for that.
Yes. Yes. Being a mint. But what I find really intriguing is what plants are going to protect the other ones or allow for extra nutrition. And I think about my Johnny Jump Ups, my violas that are so good for soothing the heart, whether it's a physical heart issue or a emotional heart issue. And sure, they'll grow in the blazing hot sun on their own, but they'll be muy pequeño, very, very tiny. But when I have them growing underneath my mugwort, my artemisias, I have two Artemisia sextorfii, Artemisia absinthium, and Artemisia vulgaris. Underneath, the Johnny Jump Ups are protected from that blazing sun, and they are full, and they're lush, and they're full of the medicine that I'm looking for.
Another advantage is they cover the soil, so they're also kind of a cover crop for that open soil.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Benefits everyone. So when you were talking about symbiotic relationship, what flashed into my mind was the Pacific yew, how that needs overstory to survive. And if the overstory is taking off, the Pacific yew is taking off, which is Taxol
right.
for cancer treatment. So right. how important those relationships or knowledge of those relationships are to all of us.
Yeah, very important. And we think about, you know, I talked about what's underground. It's not just the fungus. It's all of the bugs, all of the critters that are going to be helping to create more fertile soil by, you know, consuming decaying plant material above the ground. And then when they go to the bathroom, well, relatively mm-hmm. speaking, mm-hmm. then they're adding fertility to the soil. And then right at the surface of the soil, what's there? More decomposers, the fungus, the fruiting bodies above, right? And more insects. And we have then the ground story plants. And they have their specific needs. And above, we have the middle range plants, the bushes, you know, whether it's the elderberries or snowberries, whatever it is. And then above that, we have the semi-tall trees. We have the alders. They play a part. I mean, it's all like stairs.
Right.
And then we get to the majestic pines, you know, and the hemlock tree. They all play a part in this ecosystem that has a balance that is just so beautiful. And what I like to do with my students is have them just sit. I want you to sit. And one of their assignments that they have to do throughout the entire apprenticeship is pick one spot that every week they go to, and they don't pick. They don't water. They don't do anything but observe what's happening. What are the changes? What are the life cycles of the plants happening? What do they see that maybe they didn't see the next week? And it's such a good way to really lock in and ground the place in which we live.
And those observation skills are very important in the woods and your own garden.
True. Oh, absolutely true. Oh my gosh, I spend so much time in my garden just sitting and staring. And there have been so many hummingbirds this year.
Great.
Right? And I've grown flowers specifically for them. The Monarda and the Echinacea. They have just been loving it. And then all the bees. The bees are still buzzing around. They're doing their pollination. But they're also, you know, sipping nectar. And they bring that back to make the honey for their hive mates. You know, it's all food. And how, you know, when we think about growing a garden, we can put in parsley to put in our chicken soup, but it's not just about us. And we have to remember that we're bringing in the pollinators. We're bringing in the animals that want to live there and feel safe there.
That's right. That's why your hummingbirds come, because yeah. they feel safe there. Mm-hmm. They have enough cover. They have plenty of food.
Oh, and it's so beautiful to watch them.
Have you had the hawk moth yet?
Not that or the hummingbird moth. Oh my gosh.
We just have one that comes through every end of August that showed up last week.
Oh. They're cool.
They are cool. Yes.
And it brings us back to how we're watching wilderness and how wilderness just does it, and we can work on replicating that at home.
Right.
Not exactly, but we learn those lessons from what's happening in undisturbed nature and bring it on back.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because permaculture is all about that. Last July, I taught a permaculture class on our little farmlet on Ontario Street. We did a straw bale garden, and we did a hugel culture guild.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we build a guild, a hugel culture guild, which in German just means hill culture, we look into the wild and see what's happening in the wild, what are the different levels, you know, and just everything that I explained before about the bugs and the, you know, all the composting leaves, and then, you know, a good fertile soil. And that's all part of layers. So we started out, we dug a hole, we put in big logs, and on top of that, we had sticks and chips, and then we had leaves, and then every successive layer was smaller and smaller and smaller, just like you see in the forest. And every layer we watered very thoroughly, right? And so the logs got very waterlogged. Mm-hmm. That's where it comes from, right?
Yes.
And that helps to hold in that moisture to release it to eventually we had, it probably was 4 feet tall, that hill. And now as things are decomposing over the summer and they get watered every day, it's a lot lower. It's probably just about 3 feet tall now. And the plants are so healthy. And that really is a model in our garden of what's happening in the wild areas.
Right, right. And in our gardens, we see it with undisturbed soils. You know, if you think about the no-till movement and why that is so important, that we have to think about all of the creatures and things that are under the soil that we need to preserve as well.
Right. We don't see a whole lot of tilling in the wilderness, do we?
No.
I mean, the only tilling we see is when the elk and the moose and the deer are scraping.
Yes.
But they're not out there with their big rototiller. And the forest seems to thrive just fine without that tilling, doesn't it?
That's right. Disturbed soils make a big mess in the woods, you know, with weeds, just weeds coming in and landslides and all kinds of nasty stuff where the soil can't hold anymore.
Right. And that happens. But then what comes in are the windborne seeds. So the fireweed, all of the asters start coming in and we see St. John's wort, we see Pearly Everlasting. We see all of these, I call them the pioneer plants that come out to reclaim the soil to, as they grow and thrive and then die down and then the decomposers come in, you know, and decompose the dead plants, then they're creating fertile soil for then the bigger trees to be able to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, yes, and we could even discuss fire for a moment because that was the natural driver of things restarting, but in these days it's often logging or some other disturbing activity.
Right, road building.
Yes, yep.
And even, roof lines, that water comes off the roof lines and can affect the water around the building. And I know the permaculture has a lot to say about moving water and how to control water on your land, but what flashed in my mind was that how important those slopes are to be planted. You know, nature wants them planted. That's what you've told us. Mm-hmm. And as a home gardener, if you have an open hillside or something that's bare, get it covered. You know, put something on it as soon as you can, no matter what it is, just to get it covered so that the rest can come back.
Right. And then we can terrace. And going back to the permaculture, I lived in Mount Vernon, Washington for a number of years. Myself, my cats, all the fowl, the turkeys and the chickens. And I would teach permaculture there. And it was such a steep slope. And we built these permaculture guilds by on the downside of the slope, logs and bigger sticks and tree stumps. And then we would build it out. So then we had these level permaculture guilds. And it was amazing what was able to grow in there.
Sure.
That, Suzanne, for listeners who maybe don't know that word, it's such an interesting word, guild. And what is the definition of a guild in relationship to permaculture?
Well, that's what they call, it doesn't have to be a circle, it can be any shape, but the garden space that they're creating by doing that succession of garden building materials.
It's kind of like a grouping, you know, if you think of a farming guild, those are groups of farmers that got together and shared crops and shared seed and, survived. So another part of wilderness is it teaches us about landscaping. We were just talking about the slopes. But also, in permaculture, they say, wait a year. Don't just jump right into the land that you just moved to and start tearing and planting. Wait a year. Watch the seasons and let it evolve, even in your mind, the observation skills and things, before you really go after it.
I agree with that. You know, we need to see the path of the sun.
Exactly.
Are these areas going to be a good area to plant sun-loving plants? Is this area going to be a good area to plant shade loving plants, you know, the ferns and things like that, or the understory and the forest plants. And we won't know that unless we go through an entire cycle. And is there water in this area during the winter? You know, on our property, we have 4 acres, you know, by the Catholic Church there. And you can't tell in the summer, but we have a stream going through in the winter, you know. And so if I'm planting a garden in there, then they're not going to survive.
That brings us to shorelines, you know, waterways that we have a responsibility to protect as well on our land.
Amen.
When we have our gardens. And so do you plant wet site plants into that creek, or do you preserve that creek and let it build every year, or how do you work with that creek or
right
little
now,
stream?
Right now we're not doing anything, right? Because we've only been there 4 years, so mm-hmm. we really want to see how it's evolving. We've put in a new orchard, but it's to the one side of the creek, so it's not where that is. And we planted some fruit trees right close to where the creek is, knowing that in the fall and the spring, they're going to have a lot of water to drink, right? So we're kind of slowly but surely working with that area. I can tell you my geese love it, especially in March, you know, the big wet mud month, mm-hmm. right? And they're like, we're swimming in our own personal stream, you know, and I don't want to take that away from them.
No.
It's a lot of work too, you know, cleaning out a pool for a goose. I don't know if you've ever owned geese, but they're kind of nasty, you know, and so to be able to have something natural for them to float around, and they're so peaceful and it's so beautiful
sure.
to watch.
And it's definitely a sign of spring.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I know you were saying that here, looking forward to fall, and summer is my month. It's so lush. And, you know, something to think about, the leaves that we're hearing, the leaves in the wind that are waving, you know, and next month, those are going to be gone. And we won't hear that until May again. And it's a whole different vibe all winter long.
That's right. Right? Our senses, the sounds and the smells really do change.
Change. And, you know, I think people grieve, you know, from season to season. Some people are like, woohoo, I'm going to be on Schweitzer in another couple of months.
Sure.
And me, I'm like, oh, my plants are going to be gone. But so there is a little bit of grieving, but at the same time, welcoming in that, oh, you know, it's not going to be 98 today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thank you. You know,
that's, yeah. And mortality is natural.
Life.
That's
yeah,
life. Exactly.
It is.
So when, in your own garden, if you start seeing that a plant is failing or, you know, starting to get sick or whatever, really looking at that plant and understanding, well, maybe it's the end of its life cycle. We
right.
had this mm-hmm. terrible winter last year that everyone was just oh, distressed yeah. at mm-hmm. the beginning of spring. How many plants you lost, but that's life.
That is life. And I have a couple gals from the Ladies Homestead Gathering, our Bonner chapter, Bonner County chapter. They're coming on Wednesday, and we're going to be cutting down a lot of the garden because the plants are ready, you know, and they're going to help me do a big weeding. And then they get to take home plants that are cut down, like a lot. I have so much mint right now. Mints just really thrived this year. And so what do we do with all those mints? We can dry them for tea in the wintertime, which are super high in calcium. All the mints are.
Mm-hmm.
And the mints feed our nerves, and our moods are a function of our nerve strength. So if our nerves are healthy, they're able to send those neurotransmitters, those messengers all over the body to do everything. And, you know, how do you feel when you're fully fed after a really nice meal? You just feel happy, right? And so our nerves are going to be happy. So it's going to help us, that calcium in the mints, to make it through the winter for those who may, you know, feel a little down in the dumps. It helps to lift up the spirits. And what a great taste, too. You can put coconut milk in that tea, or half and half. That's some herbal honey in there. It's such a tasty treat.
And aside, my little old dog has been just chomping down bergamot, bee balm, and also wild mint. You kind of think a cat would do that, but not
yeah.
your dog.
Wow. Well, animals tend to know what they need.
There you
right?
go.
And
that's right.
Go for it.
That's right. Well, I think this is a good time for a break. We've been at it with Suzanne Taubert from Cedar Mountain Herbs for about a half hour now, and you've joined into 88.5 KRFY. I'm Julie Prochinski here with my co-host,
Julie Calamine, and we're just having a great talk about understanding how wilderness informs us in the home garden. I think it's great.
That's right.
We'll go to a song break that I think Suzanne picked, Wildflowers by Tom Petty. But before that, listeners, I'd like to remind you that we are having a very special second interview today at 9. So you're not used to that, but we wanted to be sure that the Native Plant Society could let us know about some upcoming events and what they've got going on. So I do hope you'll be able to stay on this morning.
And after the song, we will be back with Suzanne to talk a little bit more about gardens and wild gardens.
Absolutely. So a song break and then back.
Welcome back. We're here at the morning show, Garden Life episode with Suzanne Taubert. And our first half of the show focused on our home garden. So now with Suzanne, we're going to take a trip into the wildlands garden and learn what she brings to her wildcrafting. Now, wildcrafting is the practice of gathering plants from the natural environment for food, medicine, and all other purposes. So to begin, Suzanne, tell us what your harvesting methods are, because that is also very important.
Very important. But, you know, I want to kind of bring back that Tom Petty song. You belong among the wildflowers. You belong somewhere you feel free. That is where I take my students. And I watch their faces. And I feel their hearts expand. And I talked with one of them, Bonnie, yesterday. And she was telling me how being out in the woods has transformed her life for the better. And it's helping her husband feel better. It's helping her toddler feel better. And how beautiful is that, to be able to take people out there and teach them to respect the land, to steward the land, to observe the land, and really become a part of it. Because I know that we've always been a part of nature, mm-hmm. but then all of a sudden we have these little boxes that we live in, right? And there's the flush toilet. Don't get me wrong. I love my flush toilet. I love my electric lights, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning on a, winter morning. But we've separated us from nature. And I think nature truly does yearn for us to be with it, be with everything that's out there. And as we've been separated from it, we have to relearn how to be in nature, right?
It brings back the importance of the Wilderness Act that back then, 60 years ago, they understood how important the wild was for humans and that we keep it the way it has been for infinity.
For infinity.
That's
and
right.
It knows what it's doing, you know, and the wildfires happen sometimes because there's been an electrical storm. Sometimes it happens because a human is acting like a knucklehead, right? mm-hmm. And we need to have more respect. And just like any family, right, we need to find our place within the family. And there's a lot of joking. And sometimes there's hard lessons. Sometimes there's estrangement. But then there can be forgiveness.
Right.
And then there can be come back into the fold. Right. And I've seen that happen in my own life in so many ways. And that beauty part that my Aunt Mary used to talk about, the beauty part of life, that's the beauty part of life. So when I'm able to take my students out there and I'm watching their reaction, I can't tell you how many times I just sit there and I'm crying and then they start crying. I could start crying right now because, you know, all the feel. Yes, Julie, we all
know this. I might start crying. I'll have to turn off my mic.
It's all the feels, you know, and we feel hugged by nature. And I think that everybody wants to belong, whether they're an introvert or an extrovert. And I have both in my programs. And the one, I watch her. She doesn't talk much, but she smiles a lot when we're out. And that is such a beautiful thing. This Thursday, I'm going to be taking a group to harvest mullein. And most people see mullein as this invasive weed we kill, destroy, you know. And I see mullein, being an herbalist, as incredible medicine, not just for opening up the lungs, but for helping relieving pain. Osteopain, right? And so I'm going to bring them out there. I'm going to introduce them to the plant. I'm going to say, look at how tall this plant is, and look at how straight that stalk is, that flowering stalk. And don't you wish that your back was that straight? And don't you want to emulate the, you know, the ability to survive and thrive in areas that just are not very hospitable, and see how we can translate that into our own personal life.
Right. And what part of the mullein will you harvest?
The whole thing, Julie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Roots and all.
Roots and all. And let me tell you, it's kind of a bugger. It's easy to harvest, but it's a bugger to process.
Yes.
So we're going to have really heavy clippers for those roots. There's terpenes in the plant, and there are antioxidants, phenolic compounds in the plants. Now, phenolic compounds are water-soluble. Terpenes are groups of terpenes come together to create what we call essential oils. They're not water-soluble. They're alcohol-soluble. They're oil-soluble, right? They're, you know, they'll be soluble in acetic acid, aka apple cider vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to make two different tinctures. And so one is going to be, and it's going to be the roots, the stems, the leaves, if flowers are still there, everything chopped up, put in the jar. They're going to do one with 151 proof alcohol, which means 75% alcohol. That's going to pull out the terpenes. They're going to have another jar, same amount of herbs, same parts of the plant, and they're going to pour 100 proof alcohol, which is 50% alcohol, 50% water. That's going to pull out the antioxidants, the phenolic compounds. After 2 weeks, strain that out, put them together, and then we can use that for back pain, knee pain, for, you know, oh, I've got an elephant sitting on my chest, there are particulates in the air, or, you know, the mold spores have come out because now it's going to be fall and more, you know, moisture in the air. And so we can use that dual action. And they're also going to be taking home the leaves, some of the leaves to dry for teas. I used to live in a school bus, little known fact, years and years ago. I'm kind of a hippie, kind of try to hide it, but I really ultimately can't really deny it. And
I think we know.
Yes. Just look at me. But I had a wood stove, and I dried all my plants around the wood stove. And one time I was walking from the front of the bus to the back, and I stopped. I smelled this most exquisite, delicate floral scent. And I'm looking around, what is that? And it was the mullein leaves drying at a low temperature. It was like 80 degrees in there, right? Which seems hot for us, but for drying plants, it's a low temperature.
No, right.
And I usually, in my dehydrator, I have my temperature set at 95, which is really the ultimate drying temperature for plants. But I have never been able to duplicate that scent. And I think the leaves need a little bit drier, a little bit longer dry time. And they're going to be using those leaves for next week. We're going to do a Maker's Day, and they're going to have a box or a basket, and they're going to put in it everything that they've created over the course of their program that's going to help with killing viruses, helping with the symptoms of viruses, opening up the lungs. We're going to be making a Breathe Easy balm and some bath melts, and they're going to have their mullein tincture, their elderberry tincture in there. They're going to have their Oregon grape tincture in there, and they're going to be making some tea blends as well. So, you know, we're going to use the mullein leaves, the mint leaves that are going to be going in there, and maybe the bee balm if it hasn't gone to powdery mildew yet. Well, on Wednesday, I'm going to be doing a lot of harvesting mm-hmm. and drying, so mm-hmm. we'll see. And then, you know, they have this basket or box full of all these remedies. And if they get sick, how is it when you're sick? Do you think really clearly?
No.
Because I know I don't. I just want to lay in bed and watch 147 movies on Netflix, right? And I'm not thinking. I just want my mommy. So they have this box that has all these remedies already labeled. So if they're sick, they just go to the box. Or if their family member is sick or loved ones, or even if they want to sell, you know, they have this little kit together mm-hmm. that helps them to waltz into this fall and winter season knowing that they're ready.
So describe your apprentice program. These are your apprentices that will be coming in and helping you.
Yeah. So from May through the end of September, I have a Thursday apprenticeship program, and they meet every Thursday in modules of four, and then we do a week off module of four, week off module of four. Four, 16 weeks. And we are everywhere. We are on the lake. We're up in the mountains. We're in my garden. They're learning phytochemistry. What are the constituents in the plants that are causing actions in our body, and what and how to extract them? What part of the plant? They learn plant potency. They learn about their own bodies. They learn to listen to their bodies and be able to read their bodies more. It's amazing to me how people go, oh, I look sick. Oh, maybe I am. It's like, oh, read yourself. Take a look mm-hmm. at yourself, right? And it's not all just herbs. I talk about healthy lifestyles. I think that herbs are not the first thing to grab, but they are within. If I'm getting sick all the time, I need to look, how much sugar am I eating? How much processed food am I eating? What's my stress level? What's causing the stress, right? And we can use herbs to help with the symptoms while we're ferreting out the cause, and then we treat the cause, the symptoms go away. And so they learn all of that and so much more, so much more.
So much. I looked at your books here. You have a couple of books out, and they're very interesting. They have all kinds of recipes and ideas about just what you were talking about with your apprentice program. Mm-hmm. And one of the ingredients in there is pine tar.
Yes.
Do you make that or do you buy that?
No, I pick it.
You pick it.
I pick it off the tree.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. So it's the sap that's coming down.
Yeah, so when we get a cut, what happens?
We bleed.
Right? So the same with a tree. A tree gets damaged for whatever reason, and it oozes out the sap that can contain phenolic compounds if it's a deciduous tree, or terpenes in it, which are in the conifers and also in the deciduous trees. And it covers the wound, just like for us, a scab covers us. And it keeps things from getting in. Mm-hmm. So it keeps us from getting infections. Well, the tree can't go to the doctor. It can't put Neosporin and a Band-Aid on it. It has to create what it needs to heal itself. So as that sap dries, and it'll drip down, right? And as that sap dries, it becomes resin, right? And we can pick that resin right off of the tree. I always instruct my students, never, never pick it off of where the wound is, right? Just like picking a scab like my husband is famous for, that just reopens the wound again, right? We don't want to do that. But if it drips, you know, somewhere at the foot of the tree or on a branch or a different place where it hasn't been wounded, then we can pick that off, right? And then what we do is we put all those pieces in a crock pot, and it can have little bits of sticks and bark and, you know, ants and whatnot. And then I cover it about a third of the way up with extra virgin olive oil. It's my favorite. It's hypoallergenic. It's a stable oil. And I turn the crock pot on low with the lid off, and I go for about 2 or 3 days till the resin's all melted, and then I strain that out, and that becomes pine tar. And that is like really thick molasses, and then we can add that 5 to 10% in our salves. We can use it in shampoo bars or, you know, face and body bars, and it's going to kill bacteria. It's going to help with fungal infections and viral infections that are on the body. It helps with eczema, psoriasis, that sort of thing. And so actually, we had a mushroom day last week, and we added some of the pine tar to our mushroom cream. And we think mushroom cream? Well, I put it on this morning, and it really helps with, aren't I beautiful?
You are. Beautiful? Really?
Oh, my goodness. I'm an Aries. Talk about self-promotion. Aries are really good at that.
Well, but I do have to say her skin is looking glowing.
Thank you.
You are just looking great.
I'm 87. But, you know, I put a little bit of that pine tar in there because it's going to help with whatever may be going on in my skin. And I'll put it in an antifungal or an antibacterial. You know, I used to do farmers markets for 27 years, and I made this salve I called an antifungal salve, and nobody wanted to admit it. And it had cedar, it had pine tar, it had saxifrage, it had all kinds of herbs in there, but nobody wanted to admit that they had fungus, right? Oh no. And so I changed the name to an antibacterial salve, and it flew off the shelves. And I would say, well, you know, it'll kill your foot fungus too. And they're like, yeah, I know. It works really well.
It reminds me of tea tree oil, really.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, very much so.
So let's talk about mushrooms. We probably just have one more plant to talk about. Okay. So let's talk about mushrooms. What qualities do they bring, and how do you harvest and prepare those?
Okay, so we have several polypores in our forest here. I concentrate on the polypores, like the turkey tails, the Ganoderma's, right? Ganoderma lucidum is the reishi mushroom, which we don't really have here, but we have other species of Ganodermas. I'm not your, you know, the brain one and all of that. I know enough about harvesting mushrooms in the wild to kill us all right now, but I know my Ganodermas really well, right? And so that's what we can harvest, or we can go on Mountain Rose Herbs and buy slices of reishi mushrooms, right? In the mushrooms, they contain phenolic compounds that are anti-inflammatory, that can help you sleep better, that are anxiolytic, which means take away your anxiety, and they contain polysaccharides called beta-glucans. These beta-glucans are directly cytotoxic to cancer cells. Amazing. They need heat to be able to pull out. So just, you know, popping some mushrooms in some hot water and letting it steep for 5 minutes isn't going to do it. We have to boil it at 212 for a period of a couple of hours, right, to extract that. Or we can put those mushrooms, chop them up really well, and put them in a crock pot, cover them with oil, and then let that go on low for about 4 hours. Same thing, those beta glucans are not destroyed, they're pulled out. I put the two together with some beeswax and make a beautiful cream out of that. I can tell you, my brother was diagnosed 5-6 years ago with a very aggressive form of bladder cancer, and he started immunotherapy. And I said, I want you to start taking the fruiting body of these mushrooms. And so we went on realmushrooms.com. We got the 5 defenders, and I said 2 twice a day. And can I tell you, he's been cancer-free for over 2 years.
That's fantastic.
He still gets checked. He still gets his immunotherapy, and he still takes those mushrooms, which is working.
Wow.
I don't know.
Well, yes.
I have an idea.
Yeah. So I just have a clarification question. Were they taken internally, or were they, he ate them?
Yes, little capsules. Hmm. It's the 5 defenders from the Real Mushrooms. The difference between realmushrooms.com and others is they use the fruiting body, and they do a liquid extract that is then dehydrated and then put into the little capsules. And the beta glucans in there are just lots and super powerful. I take them. I take one a day, one in the morning, one in the evening. It helps me with sleep. You know, you're pointing out my books. I wrote a book called Quest for Calm. I always tell my students when they want to start teaching, teach what you know. I know anxiety really well. And so I'm not claiming that I have an anxiety disorder anymore, because I have done so much work around it that I rarely have anxiety anymore, which is really awesome. But I have a section in that book that talks about reishi mushrooms and how it can help us in so many ways.
Wow. So let's tell us a little bit more about your business,
okay,
where people can get in touch with you, anything that's going on in the fall. And we know the apprentice program doesn't start until the spring, but let us know what's happening with you and contact information.
Thanks for that opportunity, the Julies. I'm going to call you now the Julies. So cedarmountainherbs.com is my website. I am offering a monthly herbal monthly Materia Medica subscription, and that's starting in about 2 weeks. So 4 times a month, you get more information about one plant. It could be documents, it could be videos, it could, it's so much. The very first one I'm working on is dandelions. It's incredible the amount of medicine in dandelions. And I talk about how to get the medicine to the people, all of the things. And so that's a subscription that people can buy yearly or month to month. I'm also creating videos. Well, right now we're done creating the videos. We're doing the editing process for a video online course for my Quest for Calm. And that's going to be available on my website, also on MotherEarthNews.com. Oh. So it's published by Ogden Publishing. I have 2 apprenticeship programs. One is the once a week, and then April through October next year, I'm going to have last weekend of every month, right? So they meet with me 1 weekend a month. That's good for people who work during the week. They get projects. Both groups have projects and assignments during their program. It is just, it's so amazing. It's so amazing. I'm on Instagram at Cedar Mountain Herb School. Follow me. Hey.
Thumbs up.
Hey. Thumbs up. I love what I do.
Obviously.
The Julies. I am so passionate about bringing healthy health to people and helping them to transform. I don't transform any lives. They do. They do by all the learning that they get from me. I've been teaching for over 35 years. I know a couple of things, and I love to teach. I love to teach, and I love to see people bloom and blossom.
It's so special that you're willing to share all your knowledge, too, that it really is a community effort that you're putting out.
Amen to that.
And you were just over on the west side. Was that last weekend?
Yes. So Mountain Rose Herbs flew me out on Saturday to speak at the grand opening of their mercantile store in Belltown in Seattle. Oh my gosh, I felt like a rock star. Oh my gosh. There were probably 25 present and past apprentices there, people I haven't seen in decades. People, I took 3 classes from you back in 1999, and talk about crying. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. We had so much fun, and there were prizes and raffles and gift bags. And it was just to be around people who see each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that is so important. Whatever your passion is, find your people, find your tribe.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely in my tribe. And Mountain Rose Herbs has treated the Cedar Mountain Herb School so well, shown me so much love over the years. I'm one of their guest bloggers.
Yes.
So you just go on their blog, search Suzanne Tabert, and you'll find all kinds of things on there. And I wanted to give some love back. You know, I got to hang out with the owners, and you can tell the employees were so jazzed. Everybody was so high just on life and the excitement. And this, and I love their ethics. I love the quality of their herbs, what they sell. I love their mission. And, you know, I just love them. And so to be able to give back and be flown out, that's on my bucket list. I want to fly somewhere and then fly back the same day. I had my little backpack purse with me, and that was it. It was so awesome.
Wow, you were a rock star.
I was. Right.
Oh my gosh, what a great, great hour we've had, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Bless you both.
Sharing your herb knowledge. And that's the thing about herbal knowledge is it is a community of herbalists that really draw each other and reach out and gather all of us together. And it's a fantastic opportunity for all of us to be part of.
Everyone.
It sure is. Suzanne, so inspiring in it. Julie, don't you just want to jump into one of her classes?
I do.
I don't think anyone's falling asleep.
No. I don't know how you would.
Thank you for the opportunity,
all right. Well,
ladies.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, listeners, you've just heard it. This was just a great, great interview with Suzanne Tabor. And we're going to go to a short song break. We'll hear the beginning of the hour bird note and then back with our second interview of the morning. It's kind of an anniversary morning because it's the 60th anniversary of Wilderness Act. And now we'll be hearing about the 25th anniversary of the Arboretum.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Connect.
That's right.
Native plant gals will be here.
Cool.
All right. Well, thanks again, Suzanne. Off to music, and then we'll be back on air live. So stay tuned, listeners.
Thank you.